Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Tonight, we're digging into a topic that many founders avoid until the very last minute, usually right after their family or their board and their blood pressure have begged them to do something about it. Succession. It's one of the most misunderstood value drivers in mergers and acquisitions. We often talk about multiples, EBITDA, capital structure, but rarely do we confront the uncomfortable truth that sometimes the biggest single risk in a deal is the founder themselves. And joining me is someone who's really lived this reality across dozens of transactions. He's got the scars and the stories to prove it. Andrew Bollman, CEO, Corporate and Advisory at Deal Leaders International. Andrew, welcome. You've made the point before that exits are as much about numbers as they are about people and legacies. But let's be honest, when most founders hear the word succession, the first instinct is panic or denial, or maybe install a cousin who wants a short course in management. Why is succession still such an emotional blind spot for otherwise brilliant entrepreneurs?
Hi, Michael. Yeah, it's a tough one because I think it is probably a very jaded perspective that most founders have, because I think it starts with what is your definition of succession? And I think there, you know, I was in a meeting with a private equity group the other day, and one of the partners there summed it up really well, because a lot of founders, their business runs without them, so they can take extended leave or whatever it may be. But it's not about your business running, it's about the business thriving. So I think a lot of the clients we work with, they've attempted it to maybe replace themselves, and 99%, you know, it really doesn't work, and I'll come to that now. Or they think the next layer is, I'm going to say, more capable than they actually are in the absence of that founder. So I think it is it's a very complex framework to try and decipher. But in many cases, I think it comes down to, you know, a seller's perspective of succession and what the market sees as succession and the risks around it.
And then you get cases like Cobra, which is a deal that you've advised on recently, a business where the founder thought literally years ahead, and the result was a much cleaner path to closing a deal at the right value. What set the founder apart in this particular transaction?
Look, I think, you know, I can count it on one hand how many of our clients have gotten this right, but also had the foresight to start the journey early. And I think, you know, I was actually chatting to the majority shareholder that's just sold last week. I met with him, and, you know, he tried a couple of times before finding the right person. But I think there, I always say, it comes down to, at one level, ego, you know, to realize that, you know, as the founder, you haven't necessarily figured it all out. And also just the understanding what is required to drive growth in the business. And in many cases, you know, those skills aren't necessarily there. So, yeah, there doesn't seem to be a hard and fast rule. There's just, I think it's the mindset of founders building a business to exit successfully versus just building a business and understanding those dynamics. And it could be, you know, I'm just thinking out loud now, if I look at a lot of those, they had advisors around them or non-execs or mentors or whatever it is that could guide them. It wasn't like it just popped up in, you know, out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And they had the perseverance to keep trying. Because I think what is difficult for founders in most cases is a founding entrepreneur can't replace themselves with one person, because that equivalent person's already got their own business. They've got to replace themselves with a combination. And again, that depends on what is required. You know, is it a general manager, sales? If it's a technical business, is it engineering? And again, that starts speaking to, well, you don't have to solve it all on your own, because the right buyer can help you solve that as well. So yeah, it's a minefield. It really, really is. But it's something that takes time. And in the Cobra example, that proved just how much time it took, but while it showed up in the deal in an incredible way.
But I think you do point to the hard part, isn't it? Hiring the right replacement, the right CEO. And sometimes you can't just hire one individual, and you don't shy away from saying that Cobra made some poor CEO appointments along the way. In your experience, how common is this in founder-led businesses? And what are the red flags that a founder is hiring maybe a comfort CEO rather than a competent one?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think there's, you know, I think the founders not knowing, so they're not going to hire someone, it's kind of that analogy of peer and below. You're going to hire someone better than yourself, typically. You're going to hire someone either, I'm going to say, a version of you or the polar opposite or whatever it is. But I think it's that lack of not knowing what to hire for. You know, and that's why these individuals will always fail, because you're kind of coming in, there isn't a clear expectation of what success looks like for you. And it's, you know, for a founder to take a step back and have the maturity to allow someone to do stuff in your business that you spent 30 years building, do it differently, make mistakes, you know, all of those things, it's very, very difficult to do without stepping back into the ring. So yeah, you know, it's that blend. It's kind of the same as an exit. From a mindset perspective, you got to know this is going to take a couple of years, and you're going to have to bite your tongue quite a few times to give those individuals the runway to grow.
We see it in the listed space all the time when there's good succession planning and how well those businesses tend to perform and outperform versus businesses where the succession planning is a little bit more haphazard. I mean, you see it in the banking industry. ABS is a case in point, and it's been a laggard in the banking industry because through, I think, a combination of factors. There's been internal intestine boardroom battles. There was a cultural mismatch between Barclays and ABS, and then trying to unscramble that. And so as a result, there hasn't been that intentional succession planning, and it's lagging its peers. When you when you look in the private markets, kind of mid-cap space, how much attention do you see being given to that next layer, building that proven second-tier leadership team?
Yeah, look, I think I'm going to sound like a one-trick pony. I think there is definitely attention given. I think it's to what level are they being developed and built, you know, and a big hindrance always is investment. So as a privately owned business, you know, why have these individuals built successful businesses? Because they run generally very lean operations. And, you know, the need to go in and say, look, I'm going to invest X million rand, whatever the number is going to be, to either grow and develop my team or to bring in some more senior people and help them grow, is a big decision to take. So there's a definite awareness. There just isn't, I think, at an execution level, often the gap is just too big between that next level, so who can kind of keep the lights on, versus helping that business to, you know, kind of shift to the next level. It's quite interesting. Just one very common theme in a lot of the clients we work with is there's generally not a CFO role. And this isn't about CFOs, but it's about having a strategic person in place that's may not be the next CEO, but handle a lot of the elements that the current founder handles. So then you start looking for a different skill. So most of these businesses, and in many cases very big businesses, have quite junior financial staff. They may have an external accountant who's kind of been there for 20 years, and then they have junior financial staff. And it's you know, it's maybe starting going through that process where you can almost go through that process of elimination to say, look, it's this, this, and this. Now all of a sudden I've got someone who can start taking that away from me. I need a sales focus CEO or whatever, general manager, whatever that may be. And it's one area where buyers always look to bolster up resources, you know, is to put in somebody senior at a financial level. And so that in itself redefines what succession needs to look like. If you get, you know, one or two really clever placements that can help that support that process.
And I mean, you outline three big forms of value that proper succession planning unlocked for Cobra. Which of the three, continuity, stability, or growth, tends to move the valuation needle most decisively in real deal making?
I would think stability, and then definitely growth. I think from a valuation perspective, that had the biggest impact here because, again, you know, I look at the two shareholders in that deal, the founding shareholder and obviously the incumbent who's now taken over CEO. It's like the yin yang. They were so balanced. One, obviously, grit, entrepreneurial, incredible mind. The other, far more analytical almost in the approach. But what that brings is that brings confidence in the future and where this can go. And that, you know, it's that is the shift. The shift when you get to a certain size, and Cobra was in that size division, if you like, or weight division, where the caliber of the buyer was saying, well, we need to see it at a different level now. We're not going to buy into it based on force of personality and what's been achieved. It's who's going to take this forward. So it was definitely about comfort in where this business is going to go and having, you know, the right jockey in the right space and the right life stage, and, you know, with the same objectives for the next couple of years that they wanted to back. So it lined up really well.
And I think that speaks to a very subtle but a very important distinction, that succession isn't about replacing the founder. It's about future-proofing the business. And if you're buying a business, that's ultimately what you want to have confidence about, is, you know, the ongoing success of that business and having the right hands on the tiller make all of the difference there. How do you help founders see this not as an abdication, but as an investment in that valuation and their own legacy ultimately?
Well, I think it's starting to define what does that legacy need to look like. And, you know, a lot of founders will say, well, I want to be able to look back on my business in 10 or 20 years time and still see it thriving. So that's a starting point. Then you've got to bring kind of play it back. It's like, okay, great. Well, you 70 years old or 65 or whatever the age is, like do the simple math. Something has got to be, you know, put in place because you want to set a common objective, you know, from that perspective. But that's also around, you know, working with those founders because, you know, and I've said it in quite a few of our discussions before, where you've got to separate the business from the founder, but the founder can't. They see themselves as one. And you want to give them comfort that they're not necessarily letting go. They're handing part of the baton over. Because what founders also don't realize is 99.9% of acquirers don't want them to go anywhere. They may want them to have a very small piece of the pie if the buyer is prepared to do that, or at a minimum have them as a non-exec or you know, not lose that institutional knowledge and experience and all of that stuff. So it's really, you know, working really intensely on what are the objectives, what are the non-negotiables and what is going to feed that legacy and then play it back, you know, and it's a hard conversation because, you know, when you play it, say, look, you've got to do this. But it's also, you know, it's changing and reframing that mindset to say, well, yes, you're going to have to invest to get someone in. But if you bring the right person in, the pie's going to shift. It's going to get bigger.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of, I suppose, at one level, showing the art of possibility. But the other level saying is like, you know, what is the opportunity cost or the real risk if you don't do this? Because it will have a material impact. And we've had many cases where the succession just wasn't there. And it was almost a bridge too far to cross for buyers to say, like, you know, they can't bridge that gap. It's too late.
Yeah. And I mean, what you speak of is more the human side of letting go. And, you know, it's the psychology of those emotional stages that I'm sure a founder, when they're approaching succession, you go through kind of grief and acceptance and bargaining and all of that that you've got to manage. Just lastly, I mean, if there's one thing that every founder listening should do this week to improve their eventual valuation, something small but meaningful, what would it be?
Well, I think take a step back and look at what you have. You know, so what is your team? What do they represent? What skills do they have? And what do you need to do to start bridging that gap? Because that's the starting point. And I've said it like a broken record reality on the table. Understand what you're working with. It doesn't make the team wrong or bad. But if you've got to know that anybody coming in to look at your business, they're either going to look to you to keep doing what you're doing, or they need comfort that the business can continue without you. And you need to start figuring out what, you know, what that is. And, you know, some simple assessments can go a long, long way and at least give you direction, because I think that's the biggest issue with the exit plan is there's many layers to it. But it's about you just need a plan so you can start working towards it versus getting to the end and it's like, oh my gosh, now I've got to fix 15 things. Whereas if I'd started taking some incremental steps, there's only three left that I've got to I've got to focus on. The others have been sorted.
Well, there you have it. Succession planning. I think it's the least glamorous item on any founder's to-do list, but quite possibly the one that determines whether an exit is a victory lap or a valuation haircut. Many thanks to Andrew Bowman, CEO of Corporate Advisory at Deal Leaders International, for cutting through the fluff and reminding us that the hardest person to replace in a business is often the one who's most reluctant to admit it. Due Diligence on Classic Business is brought to you by Deal Leaders, partnering with you. For the next episode of Due Diligence, listen to Classic Business next Tuesday around 20 to 7, brought to you by Deal Leaders International.
The question should not be to sell or not to sell. Instead, the question is to sell or to grow. Deal Leaders International is a professional sell-side mergers and acquisitions advisory firm with years of experience in the trenches that can provide you with an analysis of your business and the market so you can make the best decision on whether to exit or grow your business. Email connect@dealleadersint.com. Deal Leaders International, partnering with you.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.